The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, I am Avra Lewis for the North Carolina Reading Service, and for the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Essence Magazine. The first article is titled, Lala Anthony, Finding Success on Her Own Terms. Essence Deputy Editor sat down with the star to chat about identity, motherhood, and career. It's a quiet Saturday in the doldrums of July, when I am set to speak with Lala Anthony. It's the kind of day where the desired agenda includes sitting with a cool drink and doing absolutely nothing. But Anthony, best-selling author, actress, designer, producer, and queen of the multi-hyphenates, is busy. She's back in New York City for only a brief spell before heading out again. She's in the middle of a successful fashion collaboration with Foot Locker. It's fresh off her Snapchat series, The Honeybees of ASU, and is promoting her work on the Lena Waithe-helmed Showtime drama, The Chi. When I get her on the phone, my first question is an obvious one. Sis, how are you balancing it all? It's definitely not easy, she says. Especially when you throw in a child. My son, Keon, is 13, and I want to be present for his life and all of his needs and his milestones. Like clockwork, at the mention of his name, the teenager pops into the room. Anthony politely asks me to hold a second. Through the muffled receiver, I overhear her tell her son, I'm doing an interview, okay? I'll be there soon. Please don't move anything. She comes back on the line and, in signature black mom fashion, tells me Keon says hi. Of course, he probably didn't, but it's heartwarming and familiar, part of a certain nostalgia you get when talking to Anthony. Having come up as a television personality in the period that Cash Money's Juvenile immortalized as the 99 and 2000, quote-unquote, she's someone you feel like you already know. It's easy to see how she earned a reputation as one of Hollywood's most famously supportive friends. Stars like Ciara, Serena Williams, Kim Kardashian, and Kelly Rowland are all in her squad. Anthony's spirit just seems to make space for other women to win. So yes, she is busy, but when you talk to her, she makes you feel like you've got all the time in the world. Like all Brooklynites, Alana, quote-unquote, Lala Anthony, is quick to reference her hometown when discussing her roots. Her mother was raised in the infamous Marcy Projects, where whatever they lacked for in materials, her big family from Puerto Rico made up in love. I was always proud to be a part of such a loving family that embraced our culture. Being Puerto Rican and being black, she says, I was just blessed. Her Boricua upbringing, where Spanish food and Spanish music flavored her distinct New York City tough girl swag, created her signature brand of personal style. If you are one of her 10.6 million Instagram followers, you know she's as much at home in a gown and designer shoes, dripping with diamonds, as she is in Jordans and bodycon coordinates. It is this perfectly combined aesthetic that has made her Lala Anthony collection, now sold by retailers like Macy's, Nordstrom, and Ashley Stewart, so successful. The affordable and size-inclusive brand, like its namesake, is equal parts tomboy and unapologetic sexiness. I was always a tomboy, honestly, she says. I still am, at the core. People are like, oh, you're a glamour girl. And it's so funny because I'm really not. I'm always dressed in sweats and t-shirts. Forget the Chanel purses, Louis Vuitton shoes, and expensive furs. The main pieces in the closet, she says, is the sickest sneaker collection ever. That's my thing. In her world, conflicting aesthetics are never mutually exclusive. Anthony is a woman who thrives on multiplicity, especially when it involves breaking out of the boxes folks have been trying to put her in for decades. Having started her career in radio at the age of 16, she made her first pivot when she transitioned to television. In early aughts, she appeared on MTV's pop culture staple, Total Request Live. During the MTV days, I remember being told so many times, "This is it. This is the peak," she says. "You become a VJ, and no one really does anything after that." And I was like, "I'm 21 years old. You're not going to tell me this is it for me." Her sights set on Hollywood. She began taking acting classes and auditioning. But it didn't take long for her to realize that stepping out of who people wanted her to be would not be easy. To this day, with my acting, you will still have people who are like, "Oh, that's Lala from MTV," she says. And it's like, well, that was a huge part of my life, but I have evolved since then. I have moved on since then. I have worked really hard, but sometimes I feel like because I was known for something else, I have to prove myself in these new spaces even more than the next person. The more sinister challenges, of course, came with being a Black Latina in Hollywood's white-dominated world. At audition after audition, she would find herself having to explain, "Well, I'm Afro-Latina. I am Black. I am Puerto Rican. I am all of it. I'm proud of it." But no one really understood that. They were like, "You're one or you're the other, and that's it." For years, she hesitated to respond to casting calls for a Latina role because she knew she didn't fit Hollywood's version of what that was. It was a limited understanding of the diaspora that, until recently, had permeated the entire country. Part of the same colonialist attitude that made people reluctant to see Puerto Ricans as American. For decades, Anthony believes her fellow Puerto Ricans have felt like an afterthought. This was especially challenging for an island battered by back-to-back natural disasters in 2017. First, Hurricane Irma, and then Hurricane Maria, both of which left thousands dead and the local infrastructure severely compromised. In the years that followed, waning tourism and political corruption further threatened the stability of the island. Adding insult to injury, President Trump publicly decried the idea of statehood multiple times and was even said to have mulled over selling the territory. When you look at some of the crises that have happened in Puerto Rico, you just felt like you weren't a part of this country, Anthony notes. The way the president handled Puerto Rico during those times was just really, really sad. And it just says a lot. We have to do better. Puerto Rico is a part of America. You can't just ignore the island and the people like that. The Star brings this sensitivity to injustice into her philanthropic work through the La La Land Foundation, as well as her most important job, being the mother of a Black boy in America. "I always talk to him about how he needs to deal with the police," says Anthony. "It's sad that these are the conversations we have to have with our children, but this is the world we live in. I make sure he knows that and understands the seriousness of it. I'm not trying to scare him in any way, but I want him to live in reality." Her awareness has also led her to focus on her son's emotional stability. In a society known to inflict generational racial trauma on Black children, she says it's part of why she's motivated to co-parent him efficiently and effectively with his father, NBA star Carmelo Anthony. The Anthonys are no stranger to headlines, starting with a seemingly fairy tale Hollywood romance, complete with a high ratings televised wedding in 2010. But in 2017, following allegations of infidelity on his part, they separated. Despite that, the two have shown each other nothing but love in the public eye. Neither has ever disrespected the other in the press. And in April, at the start of a nationwide lockdown due to the coronavirus, Anthony even told Access Hollywood that they were quarantining together. When I ask her about her co-parenting strategy, she doesn't miss a beat. "My son is at the center of everything," she says. "He is watching us. So if we are out here being reckless or not leading with love, then what kind of example are we setting for him about how he should treat women or how people treat and love each other?" She pauses briefly, then adds, "A lot of times people forget that, and I understand, because you get emotional when you're going through different things in relationships. But I always want my son to be able to say, no matter what, my parents loved each other. My parents loved me." Her deeply personal story of being a part of a sports family, no doubt full of nuance, flash, and frustration, seems to have inspired her to take on her latest project, the upcoming Starz series, Intercepted. It's about the sports world and a lot of the stuff that goes on behind the scenes, which, of course, I know all too well from being married to an athlete, she says. "We amplify women's voices in Intercepted and what it's like to be a woman going on this journey with these athletes when everyone's only focused on the guy's career. This often untold narrative is just one of many she hopes to bring to life in her production projects. She has collaborated with Lupita and Danny on the Broadway show Eclipsed, as well as with Issa Rae on the forthcoming project. But it is her partnership with Curtis, quote-unquote, 50 Cent Jackson, that's probably been her most lucrative, as well as her most personal. "We have been friends for 15, 16 years now," she says. "To do power together and now be producing projects together has been amazing." Up next, the two are working on bringing to the screen a scripted version of the life of Centoya Brown Long, who was recently granted clemency after serving time for killing a man who bought her for sex. "For her to trust me with this story after everything she's been through is not something I take lightly," Anthony says, noting that she was excited to bring 50 Cent into the project. "I was so proud of what he did with the series For Life. I just felt like we were already great partners and it could be good." I asked her what it's like to be friends with someone as, let's say, complicated as 50 Cent. She seems neither surprised nor offended by the question, but is quick to note that she doesn't always have to agree with him in order to love and collaborate with her friend. 50 is 50, she says. "As a friend, I check him when he's reckless, and I keep it moving. In true Anthony fashion, you won't ever hear her disrespecting anyone from her squad. We have to support each other and be there for each other," she says. "It is important." As we wrap up our conversation, there is one last thought she wants to share on love, and it is about the need for us to turn inward. We have to get to a place where we understand and recognize how much loving yourself means and how healing it is when you stop looking for that validation from everyone else, she says. "My thing is, the world's going to beat us up enough, so we have got to love on ourselves a little bit more than we have been." The next article is titled, "Black Teachers Speak Out About the COVID-19 Conundrum." Teachers whose average salary is $60,000, $477, and for whom starting salaries often fall below $40,000 are at the center of national conversations around the reopening of schools in the fall. Despite their increased workload during the shutdown, along with their unfamiliarity with online platforms, the health risk involved, and the acute toll of emotional labor during COVID-19, these essential workers still put their students first. "I understand the district wants us to come back," Flippin says now. "We all want to come back. I miss my kids and I want to see them." However, the U.S. education system was not built to deal with extended shutdowns like those imposed by the coronavirus pandemic. For educators to return to teaching with confidence, they are going to need ongoing support from school and district leaders in order to provide professional help around instruction in a virtual setting. This will require the neediest students to be provided with laptops and internet access. Flippin recommends additional mental health and counseling services for children experiencing COVID-19 related trauma. Educational leaders are working closely with teachers and administrators to ensure that this happens. Community school superintendents like New York City's Tammy Pate have developed peer-to-peer platforms so teachers can readily access learning resources and can continue to add to this hub as they enter the new school year. Teams of teachers from different schools have already worked together to create an entire set of 40 lessons with resources and other teaching samples, Pate says. For next year, faculty members can also expect clear guidelines and expectations around priority learning objectives for teachers, since most schools across the country will adopt a hybrid model of in-person and online learning. "Looking at a child across the screen will require more from us to understand the quality of their thinking," Pate says. "So we are thinking about what apps and platforms to use and how to strategically use questioning and student grouping to assess students' knowledge and skills in a remote setting." Educators are cautiously optimistic about the future, even as plans regarding their new responsibilities shift and evolve. Closing the Black-White achievement gap in a post-COVID-19 society remains a Herculean task, and it will demand more than the individual efforts of resilient, caring, hardworking teachers. It will require addressing race-based educational inequalities at their systemic roots and replacing them with programs that place the well-being of parents and children at the center. In this sense, perhaps COVID-19 was just what our society needed in order to put national focus finally on educating Black children and giving appropriate support to the teachers who love them. The next article is titled, "My Righteous Guide, Congressman John Lewis and His Commitment to, quote unquote, Good Trouble." The civil rights leader was also a beloved mentor, a spiritual leader and teacher, and trusted friend. "When I speak with esteemed elders from my Birmingham, Alabama community, many can vividly remember the day that Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. died. They recall exactly where they were when they heard the news, what they were doing, the time of day. I always marveled at their recollection, and I often wondered if there would ever be a death so significant that I would remember the exact moment I found out. It was a Friday night, 10:46 p.m. Central Standard Time, to be exact, when I learned that Congressman John Lewis had passed away. As emotions began to wash over me in waves, I immediately thought about the freedom fighters from my community and what they must be feeling at this new loss of a beloved movement elder. To make the news even more painful, earlier that same day, they had received word of the death of the Reverend C.T. Vivian, another civil rights leader. In one day, our nation lost two giants, and the South lost two of its most revered sons. John Lewis was only 23 years old at the 1963 March on Washington. The youngest speaker on that momentous day, he went on to serve as Georgia's congressman, but Alabama is where he was born in 1940 and where he bled. The civil rights icon would often tell the story of how he was hit in his head and trampled on during the procession across the Edmund Pettus Bridge on, quote-unquote, Bloody Sunday, March 7, 1965. In many ways, his experience on that day reminds me of the biblical story in which Paul says, "From now on, let no one cause trouble for me, for I bear on my body the brand marks of Jesus." Yes, Congressman John Lewis, known as the Conscience of the Congress, bore the marks of freedom on his body and carried the torch of justice deep in his soul. He was also one of the most treasured mentors and friends. 12 years ago, during President Obama's initial run for office, Representative Lewis and I drove from Jacksonville to Tallahassee in Florida, reminding people how important the vote was and how this was our moment for change. I still recall the day he first hopped in my car and said, "Let's go!" And I've been committed to good trouble ever since. Lately, though, my friend's soul had been troubled. He was troubled by the ongoing attacks on voting rights and on displaced dreamers. He was also troubled by an all-too-familiar re-emergence of police brutality and by leadership that enacts violence against the beloved community for which he had fought so long. Still, he didn't complain about the issues he was seeing. He got to work. Over the past 16 months, I personally witnessed Representative Lewis lead protests on Capitol Hill and shift focus on key issues surrounding equality, housing, education, and more. This isn't surprising for a man who lived a full life of purpose on purpose. Even if you don't agree with him, you respected his conviction. I like to think that the soles of his feet were worn from walking the path of righteousness, and I am happy he is now getting his rest. But selfishly, I wonder, what am I going to do without my cut-up partner during this election cycle? Who is going to call me and say, "I don't want to be in that fancy stuff. I'm riding with you." And we're going to the early vote polls to make sure folks stay in line. Who is going to laugh at my references to "In the Heat of the Night"? Who will get in good trouble? Will we, those of us Congressman Lewis poured into, pick up his mantle? Will we push toward freedom as magnificently as he did? As he taught us, we do not want our freedom gradually. We want to be free now. It is just one of the many reasons I love you, Congressman John Lewis. This nation owes you a debt that can only be repaid by executing justice with reverent zeal. Even though "thank you" is not nearly enough, I say thank you, my friend. Thank you, my righteous guide. I lament that you pass in such a tumultuous time, but I promise you, we are going to fix this. Your life's work will never be in vain. Glory, 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 hallelujah. Your truth will march on. The next article is titled, Black Teachers Speak Out About the Black Effect. While many teachers have questioned the impact of their instruction during this time of crisis, studies prove that the presence of Black educators in Black children's lives has an overall net positive effect. Research from Johns Hopkins University and American University shows that Black students who have even one Black teacher by the third grade are 13% more likely to enroll in a college or university. The data also reveal that the positive role model effect of having a teacher who looks like you is especially beneficial for very low-income young Black men who are nearly 40% less likely to become high school dropouts if they have at least one Black teacher in elementary school. The next article is titled, Black Creatives and Their Muses. Today's stylists are shaping the game, curating new looks for celebs of color in the always changing world of fashion. It's no secret that in the realm of style, Black people are the influencers, from our hair to our nails to our bold sartorial choices. Our effortless lays have been deconstructed and reintroduced on runways during New York Fashion Week, as well as seen in high-end campaigns. And when it comes to the evolution of quote-unquote A-list Hollywood-style stars, behind the scenes, dynamic teams are helping them make bold and iconic choices. Now, where is this more impactful than in the trusted relationship between a style architect and their celebrity muse? Taking a page from the old Hollywood playbook, where stars enlisted costume designers to help them create their signature looks, today's stylists are forging relationships with their clients that are poised to make fashion history. Whether it's Colin Carter and Cardi B, or Shiona Torini and Melina, these sartorial partnerships generate some of the most exciting and inspired fashion statements. We have run out of time for today's episode of Essence. We hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I am Ava Lewis, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Essence is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.